reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good afternoon. We are on our third case for today, which is 00-3318, In Re Commitment of Joseph Lombard, State v. Joseph Lombard. We're expecting Justice Wilcox momentarily, and when he comes in, we will not all yell late. I'm stalling as long as I can to give him time to get here. He's on his way. So I will call the case, and he can listen to the parts that he has missed on the tape, as both of you know. So David R. Karp, Attorney Karp, representing Mr. Lombard. You have 25 minutes. Mr. Weinstein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state, will have 30 minutes. And then, Mr. Karp, you've got 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court, my name is David Karp. I represent the petitioner, Joseph Lombard. This case turns on whether the Miranda rule applies in Chapter 980 sexually violent person commitments. And if so, whether in this case it constituted ineffective assistance of counsel for trial counsel not to have challenged Mr. Lombard's statement to a state psychologist conducting a pre-petition screening interview. This case boils down, in my mind, to a case of statutory interpretation. The statute specifically is 980.05 sub 1M. It says, at the trial to determine whether the person who is the subject of a petition under Section 980.02 is a sexually violent person, all rules of evidence in criminal actions apply. All constitutional rights available to a defendant in a criminal proceeding are available to the person. So the court must decide then all rules of criminal actions apply. The court must decide that all constitutional rights available to a defendant in a criminal proceeding also
Counselor,
apply.
Can we conclude that the Fifth Amendment applies to Mr. Lombard and not conclude that Miranda applies as well?
I don't think the court could do that after the Dickerson case. Dickerson versus United States, 530 U.S. 428, 2000 case, which clearly states that Miranda is part of the Fifth Amendment and would apply then to the states through the 14th Amendment due process. And it's not, and I don't think that Dickerson created this law. Dickerson says, on page 416 to 417, excuse me, wrong pagination. I'm sorry, page 439 to 440 of the decision, it says that the Miranda opinion itself is replete with statements indicating the majority thought it was announcing a constitutional rule.
Well, it may be a constitutional rule, but wasn't the constitutional rule designed to protect the defendant from incriminating himself in a crime that's already committed? And in Chapter 980, aren't we looking at the propensity for the possibility of committing future acts of sexual violence?
Yes.
Then address to me why that difference isn't a difference on which I ought to distinguish Miranda.
Well, simply because 980 is to determine propensity, you can't write 980.05 .1M out of the statutes and the
doesn't say anything in there about Miranda. It says, well, says at trial, and I could argue with you about whether this was at trial, but if I get over that hump, it says all constitutional rights available to a defendant in a criminal proceeding are available to the person. So I assume that that includes the Fifth Amendment, but that doesn't necessarily make me assume that it includes Miranda if you look at the purpose for which Miranda was designed, which was to prevent self-incrimination in a past crime.
Yes, Justice Rogensack, I think that the answer to the question lies in the nature of what incriminating means.
Okay.
Under Innes and under Cunningham, which was cited by the state in their brief, what determines whether it's incriminating is if the state intends to use the statement or to introduce the statement in trial, and I would submit to introduce it or to use it. If the statute means what it means, and it's plain meaning, then it's as if the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment and the Wisconsin provisions protecting the right to silence were in Chapter 980, and also Miranda being there, too.
What about Miranda's warning that you have a right to have counsel present? Are we going to import that in there, too, that when there's an exam by a psychologist, now you have to have counsel present?
This is such an important transaction, and the stakes are so high. At this point, there's been one of these pre-petition interviews, there's already been a sifting and winnowing of sex offenders. It's not like every sex offender goes through one. So there's a focus of attention going on already. So that I would submit that this is important enough and that there's important enough rights and things at stake that why shouldn't a person have a right to counsel? Now, I don't know that that's ever been decided that the person does or doesn't, but if someone said, well, can I consult with a lawyer first, certainly that would not be unreasonable, in the same way that it wouldn't be unreasonable for a criminal suspect to say, well, before I talk to you, can I consult with a lawyer? Chapter 980 is different than some of the other sex predator statutes that different jurisdictions have. What we do here in Wisconsin with Chapter 980 is to impose a commitment in addition to a criminal sentence rather than in lieu of a criminal sentence.
Counsel, if I might interrupt for a minute, I'm not sure that I understand some of your answers to Justice Rogensack. To begin with, I don't quite understand how you get around the language in the statute that starts with at trial. It talks about constitutional rights being provided at trial. And you're arguing for a pre-petition situation. And that's my first concern, if you want to address that.
Okay. Justice Crooks, I appreciate that question. And my first impression is that if you go to the first sentence of 1M, it specifically says at the trial. The second sentence doesn't say at the trial. But for the sake of argument, let's assume it means at the trial. Miranda really is a trial right because what it does is it protects the criminal defendant from having a statement used against them at trial. And that's the real meaning of it. And we have this popular understanding of Miranda. Well, if a person doesn't have their rights read to them, then that means that the case has to be dismissed or can't be brought. And we know that's not true. So really, it is a trial right. What I was trying to get to with my answer to Justice Rogensack was that because of the oppressive nature of Chapter 980, that the legislature attempts to balance that by guaranteeing these constitutional rights and by guaranteeing that criminal rules of evidence will apply, which is not the case in other jurisdictions. I haven't found another jurisdiction yet that has a provision similar to 1M.
And my second question, I think, dovetails with that. Are you arguing here that the warning that should have been given to Mr. Lombard was the entire Miranda warning, including his right to counsel, that nothing that he said could be used against him in a court of law, so on and so forth? Everything that he said could be used against him in a court of law. I'm misstating Miranda. I don't want to do that.
Yes, I think what I'd like this opinion to read is we hold that 980.05 sub 1M and the Wisconsin and U.S. Constitution require Miranda advisements to be given to inmates who are subjected to pre-petition Chapter 980 screening interviews.
And that would be the entire Miranda warnings.
Yes. Now, Dickerson doesn't say that the verbatim Miranda warnings are constitutionally mandated. However, what Dickerson says unequivocally is that the warning must inform the person of the right to remain silent and give the person assurances that if they choose to exercise the right to silence, it will be respected. That was phrased very inartfully. The second, I'd like to rephrase that. If a person chooses to exercise the right to silence, it will be respected. And that's where I get sort of to the specifics of this case, where we have an acknowledgement that the doctor had Mr. Lombard sign before beginning the 3-day evaluation, which reads, you have the right not to participate in the examination or to answer any of the questions posed to you, but this refusal to answer will be used as part of the evaluation. This to me seems like it is aberrant. It's prohibited by the Constitution, because in fact what the doctor is saying, if you choose not to talk to me, I'm going to use that. It'll be part of the trial. It'll be held against you. So in other words, the doctor here gives a contrary advisement. He says if you choose to exercise it, not only is the system not going to respect your exercise of the right, but we're going to use it. And that's clear that a 980 respondent, according to the Court of Appeals decision in Zanelli 1, the earlier Zanelli in 212 Wisconsin Reporter, second, says that the right to silence does exist at this pre-petition interview, so that if a person exercises their silence, can't be commented on. So Justice Rogensack, there is in fact at least the Court of Appeals decision, which is currently the law of the state, that pre-petition silence is constitutionally
protected. Well, I wasn't trying to get at that. I'm not arguing about that. In my mind, the right to remain silent is different from the right to have a Miranda warning read. And the right to remain silent, I mean, I can understand the opinions that have been written that discuss that previously, but to me, Miranda was designed to protect against incrimination in a crime that's already passed. And, you know, these are not criminal proceedings, but rather civil commitment proceedings, though we do attach to them the rights that one would have in a criminal proceeding. But I think that's to the extent they make sense. Like, you always have a right to a jury trial in a criminal trial, unless you specifically waive that. But you have to ask for it in Chapter 980. So you know, they're there, but they're not exactly the same in every set of circumstances. And that's the question that I was trying to get my mind around as I read your briefs and as I read opposing counsel's briefs.
Well, we don't need 98005 sub 1M to protect against statements regarding two past crimes. That's already protected by the Constitution and without.
I think 180 doesn't give you an additional right. It tells you what rights that are out there that you have, and my construct was trying to interpret 980 in a way that's consistent with the principles underlying the rules that we apply. Now, obviously, you know, the constitutional right to remain silent is available. You can exercise that in a civil trial, but only when your testimony may make you incriminate yourself in a future criminal proceeding for a crime that has already occurred. And I guess I just am at a loss for trying to think of a circumstance where you have Miranda warnings on the right to remain silent for something that's not occurred. Do you see what's kind of bothering me?
Well, Justice Rogensack, however, talking about things with the doctor can go to the dangerousness, which does have to be proved. The state has that burden.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's no doubt that it goes to things to be proved at trial that he may not want to be proved, but they aren't being proved to show he committed a crime in the past. Right? It's not to institute criminal proceedings against him. But I understand the liberty interest that's involved, so I can see your concern for him.
Right. And I think, again, I'm trying to make the point that if the state's going to introduce it, that means it's incriminating in this
case. Do you have a right of self-incrimination in mental competency cases?
Because you're going to be institutional. Or?
Well,
Chapter 51.
Chapter 51, okay. Thank you. You're going to be institutionalized as a result of that. Your liberty interest is going to be affected.
I think I'd need to follow up with a more detailed answer to that in writing if I could. But my first impression is that Chapter 51 is not as the stakes aren't quite as high.
Well, you don't have 980.051M in Chapter 51.
Yes, it's not in there. Nonetheless, I noticed that there is a provision in Chapter 51 regarding a person's refusal to submit to an examination. I think the standard jury instruction tells the jury that they can consider it in terms of whether the person has a mental illness, but they can't hold it against them.
Okay. Are you relying on Zanelli 1 and 2? Do I have the name right? Yeah, Zanelli. Are you relying on those?
Depending on Zanelli's?
Yeah. If the court doesn't agree with you, does it have to reverse Zanelli 1?
No. Zanelli, I disagree with the Court of Appeals in this case with their assessment of what Zanelli 1 and 2 mean and how they apply to this case. Zanelli 1 says that there is a right to pre-petition silence. And there's some confusion in the decision here, decision in this case, particularly if we look at paragraphs 26 and paragraphs 28, and I think that confusion is based on the different interests that 980.05 sub 1M protect and the interest that 980.03 sub 2B protect. 980.03 sub 2B does not apply to a pre-petition interview. That's the part of Chapter 980 that protects the silence at trial itself. But I think Zanelli 1 unambiguously says, however, that 980.05 sub 1M does protect pre-petition silence. So actually, no, it's not necessary to reverse Zanelli 1. As for Zanelli 2, I feel that the Court of Appeals in this case simply misapplied Zanelli 2. The problem with the petitioner in Zanelli 2 was that, it would be the respondent. The respondent in Zanelli 2 is that he was not in custody at the time of the police interrogation. So Miranda doesn't apply. Miranda, of course, applies to in-custody interrogation. Here the state's conceded that that Mr. Lombard was in custody for Miranda purposes. So the only question really before the court as to the application of Miranda is, was it interrogation? And I think that turns on the application of Innis and Cunningham and the special definition of incriminating. And in fact, it was the, what was sought here was statements that were going to be used against Mr. Lombard at trial.
Could I ask you a question? As I understand it, you would like the regular Miranda warning to be read before any hearing is held, before any questioning by professional assistants. If the Miranda warning is read and right to counsel is announced at government expense, you have the right to counsel present during any questioning, and the gentleman, Mr. Lombard, calls you, Mr. Karp, and says, yeah, Mr. Karp is my attorney. Do you come to the facility, and what do you do when you get there?
I go to prisons all the time to meet with people, so it wouldn't be a problem for me. And I think that...
I'm Mr. Lombard now. Yeah. You're my attorney. This guy's questioning me. He's going to ask whether he asks a sensitive question. What do you do?
Well, I think strategically at that point, I mean, to be real honest with you, my first impression is that, of course, this would not be as appellate counsel, but as trial counsel, I would want to find out about this person and just find out how much at risk they are to see, well, how do I advise you? I mean, do I advise this person to participate in the interview? And to what extent? So I think to give competent advice, that there would have to be quite a lot of background study of the case. It wouldn't be nearly as simple as someone being called to the station house in the middle of the night. But the main thing is that the person, should have the right to be informed that they do have the right to consult with counsel. And that way, if they then choose to talk to the doctor, there's been a clear waiver, so the state's interests are protected, because at that point the person's made an intelligent and voluntary decision in order to talk to the doctor.
Counsel, is there any federal or state constitutional right to counsel at a civil commitment proceeding?
No, but that's only, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. That's fine.
I misspoke. No, except for 980.05 sub 1M.
Okay.
That creates it. All right? In other words, you go to jurisdictions that don't have this. No, Allen versus Illinois is the perfect example. But if you look at the Illinois statutes, first of all, it's in lieu of a criminal sentence. Mm-hmm. But next of all, you don't find the legislature's decreed the Constitution's in here. The Constitution's in Chapter 980. So it might as well all be written in there. And the rules of evidence applying to criminal cases apply to 980.
But and even the right to counsel, I mean, you don't really have a right even to counsel on appeal, except if the state gives you an appeal, you have a right to a meaningful appeal, and we've interpreted that as having a right to counsel on appeal. So, but at some point, unless you have some connection, the right to counsel doesn't just kind of continue as long as you're a defendant involved in the system at all, does it? You don't have a right to counsel in the 97406 motion, do you? I mean, I just think that, you know.
I see what you're saying.
Right. So, you know, if you give this guy this warning, what you're essentially doing is not only giving him a warning on remaining silent and what may happen if he doesn't remain silent, but you're also now giving him a right to counsel at a time when I don't think we've ever said there is a right to counsel.
But Justice Rogan-Sack, I think that it's analogous to the situation where the police don't need to have a station house lawyer on call 24 hours a day, but they do have to tell the person they have the right to counsel, even if they're maybe not even going to meet the lawyer until they get charged.
But they do have a right to counsel. They do in a criminal proceeding by state and federal law. In this circumstance, I don't know of any law, and I know you want to point to the statute, but the statute is only interpreted. It says, you know, you'd have to, I think, broaden the circumstances under which you currently have a right to counsel in order to pull that part of Miranda in, wouldn't you?
Well, Justice Rogan-Sack, I'm talking about the Fifth Amendment right to counsel, which I think, and I don't, I think if a person, for example, a station mm-hmm. house says, right. Well, I want a lawyer. There's not a constitutional violation if they don't provide a lawyer right away,
but there is
if they don't cut off questions.
But you have to advise them that they have a right to lawyer. That's part of the warning. So you really can't advise somebody they have a right to something they don't have a right to. I mean, am I being too obtuse?
Well, but I think they do have the right because all constitutional rights applying to criminal defendants
will apply. It's the same question that the justice asked about incriminating statements. It's the same question that was asked about incriminating statements. These are not incriminating under the usual rules of the Fifth Amendment because they do not incriminate him as to a crime. He's already been convicted. He's not subject to making incriminating statements. Therefore, the argument goes, the Fifth Amendment doesn't apply. The Fifth Amendment doesn't apply. 980.051M doesn't apply. Now the question is made, what about the right to counsel? There's no right to counsel in this pre-petition proceeding as such. And if it were, there's nothing in the criminal law that makes a right to counsel. Therefore, there is no right to counsel. Therefore, 980.051M doesn't give him any rights because he doesn't have any rights. 980.051M, the argument goes, only gives you the rights you have under criminal law. You have a right to a lawyer when you're arrested for custodial interrogation. Is this custodial interrogation?
Just Abrahamson, the last part of the question, yes, it is custodial interrogation.
Okay, then if you're arguing it's custodial interrogation, then the argument is you have a right to counsel to be there. If it's custodial interrogation under the criminal law, therefore 980.051M gives you a right to a lawyer. That's the, as I hear you, the logical explanation of your position.
Yes, Chief Justice. But at a minimum, under Dickerson, you need some sort of advisement of the right to silence and some sort of assurance that if they exercise the right to silence, that it will be respected.
I understand your position. In this case, is you're really only dealing with the right to silence, and that, therefore, he's worthy of a warning under Miranda Dickerson, and that it cannot be used, if he didn't get the warning, cannot be used against him, or there can be comments on it.
Yes, Chief Justice. I don't know if the court needs to reach the counsel question in this case.
Right. I understand that. Thank you. You have five, Mr.
Do I have a right to bail?
No, you don't. By statute, you see, there, Justice Prosser, the legislature's made a specific provision about detention. So that would conflict with the right to bail.
That's a constitutional right to bail.
Sorry?
A constitutional right to bail.
But that the legislature has written out.
In 980?
Yeah, they've written it out of Chapter 980 because a person can be detained. Person can be detained without bail according to other provisions, just as the rules for waiver of jury are also different, and the rules for venue are different under the Tainter case, because there the legislature specifically has written those out. And double jeopardy doesn't apply either, because the legislature says we can prosecute under 980 even though you've already been convicted and sentenced. So double jeopardy doesn't apply. So my thesis here is that if the legislature makes a specific provision contradicting a right, that is sort of reserving out of 1M, a constitutional right, in that case it would not apply to a Chapter 980 respondent.
Thank you, Mr. Carp. You've got 5 minutes in rebuttal. Assistant Attorney General representing the state.
Thank you, Your Honor. Warren Weinstein, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Wisconsin. I do not think the legislature intended in adopting the language in 980.051M to convert this civil commitment proceeding into an analog of a criminal proceeding. And so, in my view, the question is, in terms of the Fifth Amendment itself, first of all, we know it doesn't apply to civil proceedings under Allen versus Illinois, so it doesn't apply like that unless you somehow say that the proof of mental disorder and dangerousness equates to the proof of a crime. And I don't think that's what the legislature intended at all. I don't think they intended to bar any evidence of mental disorder or of dangerousness in adopting that statute. I think what they were trying to get at was, in the criminal proceedings, in a criminal trial, we have what most people agree is a fact-finding process that we can trust. And we want the same level of trust in the fact-finding process in a 980 proceeding.
I think that's a good argument, counsel, but one of the reasons for Miranda is that it's all over by the time you get to trial if your defendant has already made damaging admissions. The reason you give a defendant lawyers before trial is so that the defendant is appropriately advised, so that when you get to trial, you do have a good fact-finding process. So why can't you argue here you're not going to have a good fact-finding process unless you protect this person in this procedure that we have before us?
Well, I have a couple quibbles with what you said.
Right.
First is, you're
quibbles
not
are
entitled
okay.
to a lawyer in any questioning without regard to the nature of it.
Right.
In a criminal proceeding.
In custody.
You have to be in custody, and it has to be interrogation.
Right. What about a polygraph?
Well,
in custody.
Aside from the fact that it's not admissible in criminal in any way.
Yeah, but what about statements given after the polygraph is over? Don't they usually depend on a Miranda having been given? And it's pretty traditional to give Miranda warnings in a polygraph, so you can use those.
But that's during a criminal process
right.
investigation, and I think that's critical here.
All right.
There are two aspects of this. First is whether or not the statements themselves are incriminating. And because one can't be prosecuted criminally for a mental disorder, even when it's even dangerousness, because that's not a crime, evidence that one has a mental disorder and might be dangerous, I don't think, is protected by the Fifth Amendment. The second is that if you're in a criminal proceeding as opposed to a civil proceeding, the way that the Fifth Amendment is required to be asserted is different. In a civil proceeding, it's incumbent upon the individual to assert the Fifth Amendment. So if I'm subpoenaed to a deposition and I testify under subpoena and I say something that incriminates me, that's fair game, even though there's no Miranda warning, because it's not a criminal prosecution. And that, to me, is the key to Zanelli 2. The reason that the Court of Appeals went through the analysis in Zanelli 2 is because one of the statements that was offered was obtained in the course of a criminal prosecution. And, of course, we all know Miranda applies in criminal prosecutions, so they did have to determine whether or not in that criminal prosecution Miranda was required. And I would say if they had concluded that Mr. Zanelli was not only was in custody and that was interrogation, then, yes, 1M would bar the statement in the 980 proceeding. But that doesn't mean that somebody in the course of a psychological interview for the purpose of civil commitment who is asks the person, do you have recurrent fantasies, that's not going to incriminate him in any criminal case.
Well, maybe I'm missing something, but in a Chapter 51, they have an examination.
Right.
And they are advised that they have the right to remain silent.
Right. But it's a statutory right.
I think of Chapter 980.
It has to be a statutory right. It can't be Fifth Amendment.
That is. It's a statutory right.
Right.
But they're advised, according to the statute, that they must be advised that they have the right to remain silent.
Right.
And not answer the questions.
But that doesn't mean they're entitled to Miranda.
Well, generally speaking, I know we've got statutes, and I'm looking at the statutes, but generally speaking, I think that Chapter 980 jurisprudence is intended to provide equal or greater rights than those provided for civil commitments under Chapter 51. Do you disagree with that?
No, but I disagree that Miranda is either a trial right or it's enrolled automatically in a statutory right to silence. The reason Miranda was decided was because of the inherently coercive atmosphere in a police station when police officers or other agents of the government question somebody about the commission of a crime. I think it is correct to say, and this is part of the whole problem with whether or not Miranda is constitutional right or not, that one cannot find the right to counsel in the Fifth Amendment itself. And there are both opinions from this court and the United States Supreme Court that say that prior to Dickerson. And therefore, it's a prophylactic rule to protect what is in the Fifth Amendment, which is the right to silence. So, the fact that someone may or may not have a right to silence in an evaluation, it doesn't really matter a whole lot because the ethics of the psychological professionals are that they're going to tell them that whether the statute says it or not. So,
well, it makes
it's there.
A difference in terms of the rights. As
I'm sorry?
It makes a difference in terms of the rights as they are enforced and interpreted in the law. I mean, whether or not a person has the right under Chapter 51 to be advised, they have the right to be advised that they have the right to remain silent and that the examiner is required to make a report to the court even if the subject individual remains silent.
And that's right. And that's what Mr. Lombard was told. And I don't think it's fair to focus on the very short part of the written explanation. If you read the post-verdict transcript, Dr. Jurek spent almost a day explaining to him the whole process, and he went through it in great detail of how he did that. And certainly it was not what he meant when he said it was going to be used, is that the ethical constraints of his profession required him to note in the evaluation whether or not he had an interview. And that's also a favorite area for cross-examination, I might add. So it is probably going to come out one way or the other anyway. But he testified specifically that whether or not he had an evaluation did not necessarily mean that he was going to be able to find that the person met the criteria for commitment. He said he'd only had four people who had exercised a right to silence, and on three of them he found they didn't meet criteria. So it seems to me that you can't really say, based on this record, that someone who exercises a right to silence, that that's going to be, quote, used against them. It's going to be noted. What's going to happen is that the evaluation is going to be based on whatever else there is, and there's sometimes a lot of stuff and sometimes not too much. So I think it's difficult to say whatever you can't. I think the wording of the Miranda itself is problematic. First of all, because it is true, there's no right to an attorney prior to the petition being filed, unless you engraft it through Miranda. But absent that, the statute kicks in only when the petition's filed. That's when you have the right to an attorney. And that was true prior to Miranda in criminal cases, too. So it seems to me that that becomes problematic. The second thing is, if you put an attorney in the room during the psychological examination, are you going to affect the accuracy of the fact-finding? I mean, I think the legislature here wanted accurate evaluations of these people. We don't want to commit people who shouldn't be committed, and we do want to commit people who need to be committed.
Mr. Weinstein, do you know the history of this written language at all? Is that a standard form?
It is no longer a standard, and I don't know for sure if everyone was using it at the time of this particular evaluation. I know that I think Dr. Jurek was using it fairly regularly at that point, but he has since changed too. According to the Department of Corrections, what they are now told is the decision regarding participation in the interview cannot be used against you, whatever that means. But then they said the examiner will be writing a report concerning potential commitment under Chapter 980 based on whatever relevant information the examiner could obtain through review of any and all records pertaining to my sexual offense history, whether or not I agree to participate in the evaluation.
Does it say that nothing during the evaluation will be confidential?
I'm sorry. Yeah, they do. They do. And he
testified,
Dr. Jurek testified, that he spent a lot of time talking about the fact that nothing that they said in the interview would be confidential.
I'm assuming that the interview with the state's doctor was while the person was imprisoned.
Yes, it was.
And I'm assuming that the interviews with defense doctors were afterwards, and that at that time he had the benefit of counsel.
I don't know for sure in this case, but they're typically after the ordered 980-04 evaluation. Yeah.
And he had counsel.
He had counsel from the time that the petition was filed.
And this was pre-petition.
This was for the Department of Corrections to fulfill its duty of referral under 980-02. So it was even prior to a probable cause hearing.
Chief Justice, if Mr. Karp doesn't object, I'd like the court to have a copy of the document that Mr. Weinstein read from.
It was not used in this case.
You may answer on rebuttal, so you have some time, counsel.
But there is a sensitivity, I think, on the part of DOC that what their psychologists were telling people early on in commitments was could be misinterpreted.
If I understand what you're saying is that even if this written document here is not completely satisfactory, that there were supplementary oral statements made by Dr. Jurek?
Dr. Jurek testified that he spent approximately the first day explaining the 980 process, finding out what Mr. Lombard knew about it, how it fit in, and explaining to him the purpose of the evaluation, the fact that he didn't have to participate at all or he could decline any portion of it, and also that there was no confidentiality in regard to anything he said or in regard to the report, that the report would be submitted whether or not he participated.
What is the department's position on the 1M language about all constitutional rights? Are we talking about only trial, or are we talking about more than trial?
I think we're talking only about trial. Mr. Lombard's counsel claims that there's nothing in there besides the right to silence, but I think there's a lot of stuff in there besides the right to silence. And certainly this court has already, back up. I'm not sure whether I think the competence decision was the court of appeals. I'm sorry. But the competence is one of the things which has been litigated. There's also the unanimous verdict, which is derives from state constitution, but it's required in criminal cases, but not in civil. A 12-person jury, at least for serious crimes, is part of a public trials. The right to compulsory process, although that's kind of close to confrontation and cross-examination, which are specifically included in 03, but they're certainly part of this too. There's the right to present a defense, which was at issue in Sorensen. But those are all trial rights. Those are all things concerning the trial of the case.
Does that include once the petition is filed, pre-trial, you have the right to
appear? Well, see, that's another problem. I would say no, because it doesn't seem to me that that's what that section deals with.
Even though, like, Chapter 51 would give you that kind of right?
Well, you do have the right to an attorney from the time that the petition is filed under 03. So, I mean, perhaps we're talking splitting hairs, but I would say, yeah, you got the right, but it comes from 03, not 05.
What would be the consequences if we were to say that all rights apply, irrespective of whether they're trial rights?
Well, I think, first of all, there would be then the right to be present under the Sixth Amendment, you have to have counsel, and the counsel also has a right to be present at any critical stage of the proceeding. It's kind of hard to argue that a psychological evaluation is not a critical stage, and there's a court-ordered psychological evaluation post-petition. So that would be one problem. I would think whether or not the Fourth Amendment applies would be a problem, especially if you're trying to take some sort of, they have this thing called the placidism graph that they use to assess dangerousness. And I think one can make a decent argument that in a criminal case, you'd have to have a search warrant for that. So you have to have a search warrant in a 980 case to give somebody a placidism graph. And certainly there may be the question of recovering documents from a physician, or, of course, the privilege problem, which would be present here anyway. But those kinds of things that have come up under the Fourth Amendment are certainly a possibility. You also have the due process problem, and We know from Doyle versus Ohio that at least in the post-Miranda world, as a matter of due process, if you tell someone you have that you're not going to use statements and then turn around and use them in any way, that violates due process. So that's engrafted in. One of the problems I have with Zanelli 1, I don't think Zanelli 1 is applicable in this case because in that case there was an exercise of the right to silence and the question was the comment on it at trial. So that to me is a trial problem.
Well, even though it happened pre-trial, you can't comment it at trial, even if it's not incriminating?
Well, that's...
I mean, where's the consistency there?
If we engraft the criminal statement, the criminal law in mass, then it doesn't matter whether the statement's incriminating or not.
Well, didn't Zanelli, in effect, do that? That's what bothers me about the argument. I think you have to overturn Zanelli 1.
Well, I don't think you have to do that because, as I said, Zanelli exercised a right to silence. And
a pretrial right. Exercised
the
right.
Yeah, it was a pretrial right, and it was a pre-Miranda statement, too. But under the state law as it exists in Wisconsin, the prosecutor can't comment on that. I guess the big quarrel I have with Zanelli 1 is...
Can't comment on silence in a criminal case because in a criminal case he had the right not to be silent.
I'm sorry?
In a criminal case he had the right to be silent.
That's correct.
Here, where does he get a right to be silent? It's all civil.
That's right. Although...
So if he has no right in a civil matter to be silent, then why can't you comment on it? That's my problem with Zanelli.
Although 51 people have the right to be silent in an evaluation, I would agree that that's probably engrafted as a matter of equal protection into 980, as the jury trial was for discharge. but the problem, the main problem with Zanelli is it doesn't cite to Doyle, and it does... But it's accurate under State versus Fensel, so.
You know, as a trial court judge doing Chapter 51s, when you had the subject refuse to respond and answer questions, okay, here's my confession. I mean, I'd use that again in my determination. I mean, here's someone who's, you know, paranoid, schizophrenic, antisocial. Well, you know, that's just another indication. When the examiner shows up and they sit there and they refuse to answer, you know, just another thing on the checklist that the person is, you know, should be institutionalized. I don't mean that committed, you know, whether or not.
Right, except.
So I did use it against them.
Right, and.
I don't know, am I.
Well, but when you're dealing with paranoia, that might make some sense. I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense with pedophilia, which is what
antisocial. Antisocial. Maybe the diagnosis was antisocial disorder, antisocial. Unspecified type.
That's true, but antisocial personality disorder is one of the ones that you need particularly good evidence of the link, because not all antisocial personality persons fall within. I should say it this way. An antisocial personality disorder does not predispose all people who have it to commit sexually violent.
Boy, that makes me feel comfortable that you, as a matter of law, will embrace that.
And that's what Post says, as I recall. But the big thing here, it seems to me, is what Mr. Lombard wants is for evidence of that clearly goes only to his commitment to be barred as if it was criminal, because certainly nothing he said in his interview was a confession of any crime, at least not a crime for which he was still subject to prosecution. I'm sure they talked about his past crimes for which he'd already been convicted, but that doesn't implicate the Fifth Amendment. So the problem, it seems to me, is you have to say, did the legislature, when they passed this statute, intend to keep evidence that was clearly relevant to the commitment out of the commitment proceeding, even though they went to great lengths to make this a civil proceeding. And I have trouble.
They'd have a lot of trouble making it a criminal proceeding.
I'm sorry?
Right? Because they'd have a lot of trouble making the commitment a criminal proceeding because he hasn't committed a crime yet.
That's right. Right?
Okay,
that's
so right. They have to make it civil.
Right. Now, they could.
And when they passed it, the constitutional validity of this was dubious.
That's right.
All right. Courts had divided, or at least it appeared dubious, and it wasn't until we got a 5-4 decision from the United States Supreme Court that said it was okay, right?
Right.
So why don't you say the legislative intent here was to give him as many rights as he might have had if you labeled it criminal? So if there's any doubt about the constitutionality, the courts are going to say it's okay.
As long as you limit that to the trial proceeding, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But I don't think they intended to go to the pre-petition evaluation or even the court-ordered evaluation.
Okay. Is there any legislative history on this?
Not that it could help, that I found.
Not that it could help either side that you found.
I'm sorry?
Not that it would help either side. Is that your
answer? Yeah, that's right. It was most of the stuff focused on other.
What about, what was our statute based on? I forgot. Was it Washington?
Yes.
What is Washington's statute?
Washington
say?
Doesn't have this kind of provision. I think counsel's correct that we're the only state that does.
Mm-hmm. In Sorenson, parenthetically, we stated in interpreting 1M, we said, all constitutional rights available to a defendant in a criminal proceeding are available to the person who is the subject of the petition under 980.02.
Right. But Sorenson was a question of a trial right. It was a right to
but
present a defense.
The discussion doesn't, put that qualification in.
No, but it's also just a parrot of the statute. So what can one take from that?
And adding who is the subject of the petition.
Right. And the question in Sorenson wasn't whether or not that section would apply the constitutional right that Sorenson advanced, because clearly it would.
That's right. It was a parenthetical in interpretation.
What harm does it do to the state?
I'm sorry?
What harm does it do to the state?
Well, I think it can.
If you say, give him Miranda, if you say, he wants a lawyer, let him see a lawyer before you guys do all your investigation. This guy's going to be locked up for a long time. Even if they release him on supervised release, he doesn't get out for a long time.
Well, from the point of view of the cost, we're going to have more public defenders because they don't do that now. And I think having an attorney present during a psychological evaluation raises a serious risk of not getting very accurate evaluations, which I don't think is what anyone would want.
Yeah, that's a hard question, because you certainly want a meaningful evaluation. Yet again, I keep on hearkening back to my experience in Chapter 51. At the time that any examination is done in Chapter 51, they already have the attorney.
Is the attorney present during the questioning or the doctor's procedures?
In 51?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know, since we don't do them. I haven't done one.
Generally, I think not, but I don't know if the issue has ever arisen.
Well, does 51 give him a right to an attorney or just a right to silence?
No, 51, the examination isn't done until...
Oh, until after the petition
is filed.
After
the petition is filed.
Right.
And at the time of filing the petition, they have a right to an attorney.
Yeah, that evaluation is analogous to 980.04. Not the one that we're talking about here.
This one is even earlier.
This one was earlier, right. This one is because the statute places a duty on the part of the person having custody, which is usually the Department of Corrections, to notify both the prosecutor and whoever. They have to do an evaluation to determine whether or not somebody might meet the criteria. And that's why they do this evaluation.
May have in effect been asked and may have been answered by the form you now use, but suppose the Mr. Lombard had said, I'm not going to answer. We're just not going to talk. Or talks, but then won't answer certain questions. Is it the state's position that that can be commented on at trial?
Not with 980.51M in the statute.
Because that's a trial thing. You said that. Okay.
I think. I mean, with that statute there, I think the comment aspect of Zanelli is correct. That you would not be able to comment on an exercise of silence in a criminal trial, therefore you can't comment on it in a 980 proceeding, too. Without the statute, it would be fair game, I guess, because this is a civil proceeding. And without the statute, you could call a prospective committee to the stand as an adverse witness. Well, you'd have to remove 03 also. But, I mean, the state could craft a commitment proceeding that did that constitutionally.
Mr. Karp should win on his argument. And the potential committee simply refuses to answer any questions. What about prior statements that have been made to counselors, group therapy? I mean, can those be used? Wouldn't they have to be relied on by any doctor anyway?
They can be used if they weren't in a criminal proceeding or if Miranda wasn't required in a criminal proceeding and the statement was voluntary. That's what Zanelli 2 actually addresses. There were two sets of statements in Zanelli 2. One set of statements was statements that Zanelli made to his probation and parole agent, the person writing the PSI, after he had been convicted of the predicate offense. And the Court of Appeals held that there was no realistic chance of prosecution, so that was not an incriminating statement that implicated the Fifth Amendment. The other set of statements were statements that were gathered in the course of investigating the predicate offense. And in that instance, they used Miranda as a structure for analysis, but determined that because the statements were not custodial, Miranda was not required, and therefore the statements were able to be used in the 980 proceeding. And I think that basically is with 1M in the statute, that would be correct. Without 1M, the first part would still be correct. One would look to whether or not a statement about criminal activity, whether or not there was any realistic prospect of future prosecution. And if the answer to that question was no, then it wouldn't be a problem with it. If there was, then you get into, was there compulsion? Because if there's no compulsion, then in a civil proceeding, a person is obliged to assert the Fifth Amendment, or there's insufficient compulsion to implicate the Fifth Amendment. And that's where you get into cases like Minnesota versus Murphy and Tate versus Schwartz, decision of this court, where the determination is whether or not there's sufficient compulsion in the probation and parole setting. But that still only affects the admissibility of the statement in the criminal proceeding in the absence of the statute, at least.
Thank you, Mr. Weinstein. Mr. Karp, would you deal first with that?
Well, I'd like to look at it, but I suppose the court could take judicial notice of it. It is an improvement, and Dr. Jurek changed his form, showing some sort of intent in his part.
Mr. Karp, you have to stand in front of the microphone so we can get you on tape.
I'm sorry. The Chapter 51 statute, 51.99A4, which I quoted on page 24 of my brief, just says that the examiner is required to make a report. It doesn't say that the examiner is going to use it in the evaluation, or it will be used in the evaluation, it will be used in the trial. The Chapter 51 advisement is much better. This is definitely an improvement, but again, I haven't really had a chance to analyze it. Let me stress that this is not a therapy session that Mr. Lombard was involved in. He was not going to talk to his probation officer in order to stay out of prison, to keep his privilege of probation. It's a different situation. If the court decides that 980.051M just protects trial rights, then that means that the legislature here is engaged in surplusage because they've already protected trial rights in 980.03 sub 2. And the legislature doesn't do it. By finding that at least the constitutionally acquired part of Miranda is required for Chapter 90, the court is not turning this into a criminal prosecution. Not at all. Dr. Jurek may have been trying to meet his ethical obligation by trying to get an examination, but you can't compel that. You can't get that at the cost of someone's constitutional rights. Just as a detective wants to get a confession from a suspect or get a statement from a suspect, that doesn't mean that the detective can make his interest in getting that statement to be more important than the Fifth Amendment. Dr. Jurek might have a good batting average with not actually using the silence of a potential committee against the committee, but Mr. Lombard didn't know that. That's not what was told. He was told, if you choose to not answer, that will be used. Miranda is applied to in the criminal context, does not interfere with fact-finding. It doesn't even interfere that much with getting confessions. Let's talk about the trial rates that the court has found for. I'd like to look specifically at Sorensen. Yes, there's a trial right involved there. But the way I look at Sorensen is that what happened is Mr. Sorensen, way, way back before the Chapter 980 prosecution was started, plea bargained away his right to present recanted evidence in the criminal matter, which is how he got into the mess that he got into. So really, these are rights that are involved before the trial. Yes, it involves whether or not someone can present something at trial or cannot present something at trial. But even Sorensen goes way back to the pretrial matter. There's not going to be a parade of horribles. We're not going to have to turn these matters into criminal proceedings. By finding Miranda applies, I don't know that you'd need a search warrant to do a P-graph on a person. I don't think you could force a person to do a P-graph if he didn't want to. It wouldn't be possible. He has to agree. Otherwise, he's not going to be able to get the device put on. Whether something is relevant or not does not relate to whether it violates the Fifth Amendment. Now, if someone wants to consult with a lawyer, I suppose it would be up to the doctor whether or not he could live with that, just as it's up to the police detective whether or not he can live with someone having a lawyer present, or whether he simply wants to curtail the interrogation at that point and cut it off. This question is framed as an effective assistance of counsel issue. If Miranda applies, the prejudice to Lombard was obvious in counsel's not moving to suppress. There is no reasonable strategic reason for trial counsel to have waited until after verdict to challenge the statement. At the very least, the court ought to remand for an evidentiary hearing or to consider ordering new trial in addition to the remedy that I requested in my brief. Thank you.
Mr. Karp, you didn't say whether you objected or not, and I don't like to put you on the spot here to that form, and I don't know whether the court can take judicial notice. Is it published anywhere, Mr. Weinstein? It's used in psychological evaluations by all people making psychological evaluations, or just some?
I think just the ones they're considering for 980.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have any objection to the court looking at it.
Of course, you don't know what the court's going to use it for. Thank you. Then we'll take a copy of that, please. Would you give it to the marshal? She'll make copies for everyone who has it now. Do you have Mr. Garp? Okay, would you do that?
I have
it. Okay. Somebody give it to the marshal. One of you. Give it to the marshal so the marshal can make copies for the court. I'm accepting it, subject to your agreement and not knowing what the court might want to do with it. With that, the proceeding on 003318, In Re Commitment of Joseph Lombard, concludes. Thank you all. Seems as if we have at least one 980 case a term, if not more. Three? Thank you. Just seems that way. We're in recess until I think it's March 24th for oral argument. The court will reconvene in the conference room at 3:15.